Well, now this is a hard story, isn't it? This is a part of an ongoing theme in Luke, and it's almost like the story you heard today that Jesus told could be a midrash or an explanatory story for the text that we ended with last Sunday. Last Sunday, we ended with Jesus saying, "You cannot serve two masters. You will either love the one and hate the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and ignore the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." Now, mammon often gets translated money or wealth, but it's a good deal more than that. Mammon is what we today might call privilege. Wealth is part of that. But privilege is that thing that you are allowed to do that others are shut out of, are not allowed. For example, if you belong to a club, you pay your dues, you are able to go, your guests are able to go, but people who have not paid their dues and don't belong to that club are not able to go. You have that privilege, right? So in essence, Jesus is not simply critiquing wealth or money. He's critiquing a whole culture of privilege. He starts this way. Once there was a rich man. Already we know something's wrong with this story. The rich man should have a name, right? If I ask you who the richest people in the world were, you could probably name a few names, couldn't you? I bet you could. Bill Gates? Warren Buffett? There are probably some others. You see their names on television. You see their names in magazines. We know who the rich folks are, the richest of the rich, and they have names. Now, the poor, that's something else. They're generic, the poor, you know. Jesus turns that on its head. In this story, it's the rich man who has no name. He is a generic figure, the rich man. There are those in the past who have taken that term, which had dives, which they'd taken for a name, but it's not a name at all. Dives simply means rich man. So he is this nameless, faceless, privileged character. How do we know he's privileged? He dresses in purple. Who dresses in purple in the ancient world? Royalty. The 0.001%. That's who dresses in purple. He wears fine linen. He eats sumptuously every day. Now, I'm not talking about on birthdays and anniversaries. I'm talking about every meal, every day. All right? He eats sumptuously. He is the privileged of the privileged. And Jesus wants us to know that. He tells us that in the very first sentence. Then he introduces another character. Then there was a beggar named Lazarus. He gives the beggar a name. And not only does he give the beggar a name, it's not just any name like Bill or Joe or Michael. It's the name of one of his best friends. When you think about the people Jesus associated with, he associated with the apostles, he associated with other disciples, but he had a few folks who are portrayed in the Gospels as his intimate friends. Mary and Martha and their brother Lazarus are probably followers and disciples too, but in the Gospels, they are his friends. He names the poor man after one of his closest friends. How does that change the story, huh? The rich man's kind of a cipher out here, and the poor man has the faith of one of our closest friends. He sits at the rich man's gate every day. He lives in a gated house to keep people like Lazarus out. Longing for what the rich man fed his dogs, longing to have even what he would throw away from his table. In the Middle East, you use bread as a spoon. You still do to this day. Sometimes you just eat the bread along with it, but sometimes if the bread gets too soggy, you can just throw it to the dogs. He doesn't even get that. The rich man does not even acknowledge Lazarus to the point that Lazarus receives what the man feeds his dogs. For the rich man, Lazarus does not exist. And so we're dealing with an issue in Jesus' story that is an issue today as well. And that is, whose life matters? Jesus is pretty clear about the lives that matter, because Lazarus' life does not matter to the rich man at all. He doesn't even exist. But Jesus names him because he knows that when people have traditionally been left out and their lives have not mattered, they need to be named. So, what does Lazarus get? The man lets his dogs out, and the dogs come and lick Lazarus' sores. That's all he gets. Then we're told, Lazarus dies, and angels come and carry him to the bosom of Abraham. Now, to be a child of Abraham is a form of privilege in the ancient world. To be children of Abraham is to define privilege within Jesus' context. Although Jesus does say that God could turn a bunch of rocks into children of Abraham if God wanted to. So it's not a status of privilege in Jesus' eyes. But angels come and carry him. I mean, what kind of funeral procession is that? That's better than one you get in New Orleans, right? The angels come and they carry you off to Abraham's bosom. Well, if Lazarus gets that kind of funeral procession, just imagine what the rich man's going to get. Jesus said, and the rich man died and was buried and went to hell. Ow, that's not the way this story's supposed to go, is it? The rich man died and was buried. Done. No angels, no Abraham's bosom, Hades, where he is tormented. Whoa. But the rich man, we hope, learns something from this, right? Maybe this beggar that is outside his door has gained some humanity, a face. Maybe his life actually matters now. We learn pretty quickly that's not the case, because it's still all about the rich man. He says, I'm burning up over here. Won't you send that boy to go get me some water to cool my tongue? Won't you send Lazarus? He still thinks Lazarus is there to serve his needs. He still thinks it's all about him. He hadn't learned a thing. So Abraham sets him straight. Abraham said, whoa, 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 wait just a minute. You had all your good stuff in life. Don't you remember that? You were waited on hand and foot in life. You had sumptuous meals in life. And Lazarus had nothing except your dogs to lick his wounds. And that wasn't your doing, that was the dogs' doing. So now the tables are turned. And you are there, and he is here with me. And there is a deep chasm that divides us. Who made that chasm? He doesn't say that God made it. It's my opinion that the rich man made that chasm. Because you see, to him, there was always a chasm between him and Lazarus. Because Lazarus' life did not matter. He had no face. He wasn't real until the rich man needed something, needed to be waited on. And then he was willing to call him by name and have him wait on him. Well, the rich man says, if you can't send him to help me, at least send him to help my five brothers. I have five brothers, and they are just the way I was. They're privileged. They're wealthy. They wouldn't have done any more for Lazarus than I did. Send him to warn them. You see, he still thinks Lazarus is his servant. Send him to warn my brothers. At least there's a little humanity and compassion in him caring about his brothers, but not much. And Abraham says, they've got Moses and the prophets. They've got the Torah and the prophets. Let them read the Bible. It's all in there. If they read the Bible and can't get this, come on. We've got the Bible too, haven't we? Jesus said, summarizing the Torah and the prophets, that if you follow two commandments, you could do everything that the law required. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. The only problem was, you have to understand that your neighbor's life matters. The rich man did not see Lazarus as a neighbor. He had the law and the prophets. He just didn't choose to follow them. So Abraham says, they got the Bible. Let them read the Bible and do what it says. Because they would not believe even if someone came back from the dead. Who comes back from the dead? Well, first of all, Lazarus does, right? Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead. Not the character, but his friend. And then, of course, Jesus comes back from the dead. So you know what? I think Luke is adding a little commentary there about his own time. Because there were still people in the Christian community who were acting like the rich man, who were receiving their privileges, not sharing those privileges, not seeing their neighbor as a neighbor, not understanding that their neighbor's life matters. And they did have someone who had come back from the dead. And guess what, folks? So do we. We have the Torah, we have the prophets, and we have somebody who came back from the dead to teach us how to love God and to love our neighbor, and we still don't get it. And I think one reason we don't get it is that privilege is a hard thing to get beyond. First of all, when you've grown up with privilege, it's invisible to you. You don't even recognize how privileged you are. They're talking to us, folks. We don't recognize our own privileges and are unwilling to acknowledge that things we get by with, other people get killed for. Things we get warned about, other people go to jail for. And the second reason it's hard to get beyond privilege is because we like it. It benefits us, and we feel deprived if other people have what we have. That's not what the Torah says. That's not what the prophets say. And that is not what the man who came back from the dead said to us. Our desire to hold on to all of our privileges is like a man who makes soup and thinks he can own the smell of it. What is the payment for stealing the smell of soup? It's the shadow of a coin. Not a coin. It's the shadow. I'm convicted by this story because I am privileged. I am privileged in more ways than I probably even recognize. And Jesus is calling out to me not to deny that, but to use that privilege and invite other people into it and share that. To use the wealth I've been given to invite other people into that and share that so that we all are privileged. So that privilege is a basic right of every human being. It convicts me, and I hope it convicts you. Because I think Jesus has a lot to add to our discussions in current times about the role of privilege, about whose life actually matters, and why it's important to name those lives that have been neglected. And he shows us a way beyond our own privilege. I wonder what would have happened if that rich man had ever once stopped to hear Lazarus' story. Why he was on the street. What his life had been like. Why he became the person he became. I wonder what would have happened if Lazarus had ever become real. If his life had ever come to matter for the rich man. I think it would have been a different story. I am hoping that my story and your story will be different too, because we've been willing to see the reality of our neighbor, to know that their life matters, and to hear their story. Just doing what Moses and the prophets and Jesus told us to do. Thanks be to God.